welcome to the 388th edition of Travel Itch Radio, brought to you tonight by the best holiday gift of the year, my book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. It's 480 pages for just a sawbuck, such a deal. Make sure you get the 2020 version with Mike Trout on the cover. Tonight, we bring you the second half of our two-part series on the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, signified by the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920. Mary Ellen?
And speaking about that and much more is Nancy Han Bono, president of NHB Marketing and Communications and a contributor to The Cultural Traveler, Exploring America. Welcome, Nancy, to Travel Itch Radio.
Well, thank you so much, and good evening to both of you. Appreciate being here.
And we appreciate having you. Nancy, what is the significance of the 100-year anniversary of the women's suffrage movement?
Well, it's a very significant time in our history. The anniversary marks the passage, as you mentioned, of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution that guarantees and protects a woman's constitutional voting right. And even today, it's considered one of the largest extensions of democratic voting rights in our nation's history. The struggle was a very long one. It began in 1848 when the movement officially launched at the first Women's Rights Convention held in Seneca Falls, New York. And it went on for another seven decades until the ratification as the 19th Amendment to the Constitution in 1920. So it was a long time in the making.
I'll say, who are some of the most notable women involved in the women's suffrage movement? How about, I mentioned some names, and we'd appreciate some comments. How about Susan B. Anthony?
Well, you probably started with one of the most recognizable names. I think everybody has at least heard of Susan B. Anthony and is familiar with her being on the dollar coin. She is most likely the one that comes to people's mind. But she was really just one of many women who contributed to the cause. And there is a small core group that we'll talk a little bit more about later as well. Interesting about Susan is she came from a Quaker family who were already very active in the abolitionist movement. And in fact, Quakers were among the first group of white people to denounce slavery and believe that all people were equal anyway, regardless of sex or race. So they were a little bit of ahead of their time in equality. Her father was also friends with Frederick Douglass, so that was kind of ingrained in her from a very young age. Susan had the advantage that she was a natural leader. She was very strategic. And, you know, at the time it was thought that it was improper, you know, if a woman did anything, you know, like give speeches in public, they were supposed to be staying at home. But she ended up traveling the country and making many passionate speeches against slavery, and that was before she got involved in the women's movement. So what really motivated Susan B. Anthony was the fact that after the 14th and 15th Amendments were passed that allowed African-American men to vote, she felt that, you know, they hadn't gone far enough and that women had been passed over.
And how about Lucretia Mott?
Yeah, like Susan B. Anthony, Lucretia Mott was also a Quaker and a fellow abolitionist. You'll start to see a pattern here in a little bit. Lucretia became active in the women's movement when she met another suffragette, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and that was at the 1840 World Anti-Slavery Convention that was held in London. And that was what really inspired her. Once she met Elizabeth Cady Stanton, that kind of set her on the course for activism and women's suffrage.
And how about Elizabeth Cady Stanton? You bring her up.
Yes. Elizabeth, well, she was one of the suffragettes that was really ahead of her time because she wasn't just concerned with, you know, voting rights. She took the cause to a whole new level. She addressed issues such as maternity, divorce law, and married women's property rights. And you can imagine those were things that just weren't even thought of or talked about during that time.
Absolutely. And Sojourner Truth?
Yeah, Sojourner Truth is an interesting character. She was known to be very charismatic, and she was one of several African-American women who became involved in the movement. She was actually an escaped slave, and she had an epiphany. She was actually born in New York as Isabella Bonfrey, and then she changed her name to Sojourner Truth, And when she really gained national recognition, and eventually international, she wrote her autobiography. And once that was published and it detailed a lot of the struggles of her freedom, that's when she really became known. And one of the interesting things about her is she never learned to read or write, but she managed to produce her autobiography through dictation. So I thought that was pretty amazing.
Oh, how about that? Is it still available? Is it still in print?
You can still find it. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Absolutely,
and what about
yeah.
Lucy Stone?
Well, I said there was an ongoing theme. Lucy's another abolitionist turned suffragette. Lucy was the first woman in Massachusetts to earn a college degree. She graduated from Oberlin College in Ohio. And the thing I love about Lucy, I think it gives you an idea of the kind of forward-thinking woman she was. When she got married, she insisted that the word obey be struck from her marriage vows. And then refused to take her husband's last name. So I thought that was pretty amazing. But
that's
it must
progressive.
Have worked out. Yeah, they were married for 40 years until her death. So they did something right in that marriage.
Yeah. And Alice Paul?
Yeah, Alice Paul, I have to confess, is one of my favorites because I'm just so amazed by her. She was, again, the ongoing theme, she was a Quaker, like Susan B. Anthony and Lucretia Mott. But Alice, even though she was a Quaker, you know, and they're thought to be pacifist and all of that, she organized one of the most militant wings of the movement. Mm-hmm. So went totally against her upbringing. She became involved with the suffrage movement during her time working in England. She graduated from Swarthmore College in New York and headed over to England to work in what they called at the time settlements. She was a social worker. And there she befriended Christabel Pankhurst. And for anybody that follows the history of the women's suffrage, Emmeline Pankhurst was her mother, and she was one of the prominent British suffragettes that most people have heard of. The thing about Alice, she was just incredible. She was so brave, and she had such a, you know, dedication and persistence. She was imprisoned several times. She spearheaded a hunger strike during her imprisonment to protest the poor prison conditions. But she did live to be 92. So unlike some of the original suffragettes, she did live to see the progress that was made through their struggle and through the suffrage movement.
That's so great. And I have one more name for you. How about Ida Wells?
Okay, well, I'm glad we're talking about Ida because Ida was one of the African-American suffragettes. In addition to Sojourner, and there were others as well. But Ida was a prominent African-American journalist. She was also an activist and researcher. She was from Mississippi. And she wrote about the conditions of African-Americans throughout the South. So she really got the word out about that for, you know, people that might have not really understood what was the repression in the South. She ended up traveling also internationally, spreading the word. And she also did confront at times the women's suffrage movement, the white women involved, because sometimes they didn't see eye to eye and didn't totally understand where she was coming from and her goal to raise the profile of the African-American suffragettes. She was also a founder of the National Association of Colored Women's Club, and that's the forerunner to the NAACP.
How about that? So why do these women stand out to you? They all sound amazing, but to you personally?
Well, personally, when I was researching, and this really just started, you know, I was researching for an article for the Cultural Traveler, and I just got so into it and learned so much and was just fascinated by the topic, and I will probably continue to research it after, you know, to come. But basically, their bravery and persistence, you know, it was at a time when women were expected to, you know, not to be educated, to stay at home, to have children and care for the family. You know, their lot in life was pretty much laid out for them. And when the women went out and they were protesting and, you know, making these cases for this cause, they subjected themselves to really some fierce ridicule and oftentimes abuse, you know, emotional, physical. They were yelled at with obscenities. Things were thrown at them. They were spat at. So they truly were suffragettes, and they never lost sight of that end game. They had such a focus and a vision of what they were doing.
We're talking with Nancy Han Bono about women's suffrage and the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment. Nancy, do you recommend people visit the Susan B. Anthony Museum?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. That is the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House is located in Rochester, New York, and it had been closed for a while during COVID, but it did reopen back in July. And this is a great opportunity to really learn a lot about the women's movement. She spent 40 years of her life living and working in this house. There's a guided tour. You know, you can walk the grounds, and they take you in a portion of the house, and you get to actually see the parlor where she was arrested. I know we talked about that last week with Richard Peterson. She was fined $100 for illegally voting in 1872. And then the other thing to note is this year also marks, in addition to the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, it marks her birthday, the anniversary of her 200th birthday. So there are lots of activities surrounding that, in addition to the celebration of the women's suffrage all throughout the city of Rochester, not just at her house, but throughout the city.
Nancy, why do you think, or this is a tough one. What would people find most surprising about the women's suffrage movement?
Well, there's a lot of things that I found surprising about it, but I think that people and I found surprising was I would automatically think that the amendment would state, you know, now women are allowed and have the right to vote. But it doesn't. What the 19th Amendment actually did is it didn't mention women, guaranteeing any women the right to vote. Rather, what it did was make the previous wording unconstitutional. So the actual text, you know, says a vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. So that's basically what it was. And then the other thing I found, you know, you automatically think, oh, well, the law passed, you know, women could all vote, everything was good. Well, that wasn't necessarily the case because there were still a lot of the states had their own laws. So, for example, some of the states would have, you know, criteria where you couldn't vote unless you were a certain age or a certain, you know, prove your citizenship or your residency or even your mental competence. So there was still a lot of hurdles to go through. And also,
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to mention that it wasn't, you know, another thing that people don't realize is, you know, it wasn't until the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that black women could vote. So that was still yet another 45 years until African-American women could vote. And that's, I think that kind of gets lost in it as well sometimes.
I think you kind of touched on a couple of these things, but what particular challenges existed for the women's suffrage movement?
Yeah, well, it kind of was a perfect storm. At the height of the movement, there was World War I, and then that overlapped with the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. So I think most of us now have a much better understanding of what that means. And so it did affect the momentum of the movement, a lot of these women stopped their work for the suffrage, but they did serve during the war effort. So this actually, in a way, worked in their favor. And it was a turning point because they had been trying to get, you know, President Woodrow Wilson to recognize them and acknowledge them. And I think you mentioned before and also Richard last week about, you know, the picketing and the protest and all of that. And what happened was finally President Wilson acknowledged it. You know, they did such a great job during the war and helping with that effort that he did finally publicly endorse the movement. And then that led to the 19th Amendment being passed by Congress in 1918 and then ultimately to the ratification in August of 1920.
What lasting impact would you say did the passing of the 19th Amendment have on women, and what voting and civil struggles still persist?
Yeah, well, I just mentioned, of course, you know, about the Voting Rights Act. That was kind of the progression that led to the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that prohibits racial discrimination, as I mentioned. Also, the amendment led to the Equal Rights Amendment. And ERA, and I think a lot of people don't realize that still has been, it's never been ratified. It was proposed in 1972, and it needs 38 states are needed to ratify, and only 35 have ratified. So it has a kind of a long, crazy history, and the deadline has continued to be extended. And funny enough, at the beginning of this year, the House voted to retroactively remove the deadline. So before then, they were having to go back and, you know, continue moving the deadline. So I'm not sure what the future is, quite honestly, but, you know, it's still in the works, which is hard to believe when you think back on all the days, you know, Gloria Steinem and all the, you know, all those activists that came, you know, after the women's suffragettes. And then I found particularly poignant that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, recently passed away because she was one of the leading champions for gender equality, you know, for both men and women during the latter half of the 20th century. And I guess you're talking about voting and civil struggles that still exist. I'd have to say, not to get too political, but in today's environment, you know, there's still the disenfranchisement of voters, and so the fight continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, on a more pleasant note, what special commemorative events and exhibits are taking place to mark the 100-year anniversary of women's suffrage? You talked about at the Susan B. Anthony Museum, but I'm sure across the country there are other things.
There are, and there are a lot of great things. One of them, several that you can go in person, and then, you know, a lot of good virtual and online exhibits as well. One other in New York, the Seneca Falls, New York, there's the Women's Rights National Historical Park, and that was actually the site of the Women's Rights Convention held in 1848, and that's open to the public. The Visitor Center is kind of starting to open up again, but it is on those grounds is where Elizabeth Cady Stanton's home is, and you can tour the grounds and, you know, see her home and some of the other buildings. Another one that has been around since right after the ratification, since February of 1921, is a beautiful marble monument of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony and Lucretia Mott that is in the Capitol Rotunda. So if you do visit, I know, if you do a guided, you have to be part of the guided tour of the Capitol, but you can go in, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it was done by a sculptor named Adelaide Johnson, and she did it for the World's Columbian Exposition held in Chicago in 1893. So that's around anyway. But one of the things I'm really excited about is that just this past August in Central Park, they unveiled a new 14-foot-tall bronze monument of Susan B. Anthony, Sojourner Truth, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So that, believe it or not, in Central Park, that is the first monument honoring historical women. That apparently, I never really thought about it, but there are several monuments of women, but they're all fictional figures or that type of thing. So
that's right. Yeah.
Good timing for the 100-year anniversary to unveil that. And then I'll mention one more here that I found to be a really great resource, the National Women's History Museum. And it is right now, it's only an online museum, but has some great virtual exhibits. And the plan is to build an actual museum on the National Mall, and then it will become part of the Smithsonian Institution. I don't really have the, you know, the dates and the deadline. I'm sure that's changed recently, you know, with everything going on, but that's something to look forward to as well.
Absolutely. We're talking with Nancy Han Bono about women's suffrage.
Nancy, other countries have chosen female leaders. I'm thinking about Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, Andrea Merkel, Margaret Thatcher, but the U.S. has been far behind. When do you think we might fill that void?
Boy, I don't think I can predict that, but I think we're certainly closer than we ever were before. And all I can say, it's just a matter of time, and I would hope it's in my lifetime, but certainly in the not-too-distant future.
And speaking of elections, how important is the women's vote in the U.S. presidential election this year?
Well, it appears to be more important than ever. I think the fact that both of the presidential candidates are trying so hard to appeal to women voters certainly demonstrates the importance. So I would say the answer is, yeah, more important than ever, in my humble opinion.
We're talking with Nancy Han Bono about women's suffrage.
Nancy, if someone wants to see articles and artifacts on women's suffrage, where should they look?
Okay. Well, I had mentioned that one, you know, the virtual National Women's History Museum. Also, the National Archives Museum, which is in Washington, D.C., it's only online, but it's an exhibition called Rightfully Hers, American Women and the Vote. Excellent interactive sessions, you know, with speakers and that type of thing, and you can actually they have viewings of original documents, including the original 19th Amendment document. So that would be something great to see.
And am I correct in thinking that there are lots of photographs at the Library of Congress as well?
Yes, that too. Yep.
Okay. How have women's rights improved in the 100 years since the approval of the 19th Amendment?
Well, there's still a long way to go. I think there's always still a long way to go with these kind of things. But thanks to the ongoing efforts of, well, men and women, women have progressed, particularly in the area, I think, of education, marriage equality, maternity leave, property rights, just to name a few. And some of those were, as I mentioned earlier, some of the things that the women were originally going after. So I think we could all say that we certainly have progressed in those areas, with a still a ways to go.
You're listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com. Or check out the archive show on Facebook. And we're talking with Nancy Han Bono about women's suffrage on the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment. Mary Ellen?
Nancy, Richard Peterson told us last week that Rosie the Riveter was a real person who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. How much influence did she have in mobilizing the female workforce during World War II? And do you think we could have won the war without women working in our factories?
Well, you just got to love Rosie the Riveter. You know, those of us, you know, we all are familiar with that lovely, you know, the strong, you know, bicep, you know, muscle and all of that. It's funny because several people, you're right, there is one school of thought that thinks that Rosie's from San Francisco. There's other people that have stepped forward to claim, no, I'm Rosie the Riveter. I'm the one that was on the poster. So that's still up for debate. But what I like to kind of think of her is that she's a composite of all of the women who worked in the factories during the war. They certainly contributed to boosting the morale of the women overall, and they become a cultural icon. And I would like to say that, yes, definitely they helped win the war. Absolutely. And just a sidebar, Rosie the Riveter National Historical Park is in Richmond, California, not too far from Oakland. So maybe there is something to that about her still alive and well in Oakland. Who knows?
And you know something? For years we've been hearing about equal pay for equal work, but isn't that still a pipe dream in most places?
Well, it's still a very real concern of this day. I would certainly agree with you, but my feeling is, you know, as more women become involved in politics and are elected to positions of in the government, things will continue to change for the better. You know, for example, right now there's currently only 26 out of 100 U.S. senators are women, but this could change very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But, anticipate that it will continue to do so.
Mm. And could you tell our listeners about The Cultural Traveler, and how can they subscribe?
Oh, I would love to. The Cultural Traveler Exploring America, it's a national platform where we share diverse, you know, information about oftentimes undiscovered arts, culture, heritage, historic, Native American, outdoor experiences, really anything to do with authentic American experiences. And we published the Cultural Traveler magazine, as we mentioned. You spoke to Richard Peterson, the publisher, last week. And it's a beautiful magazine. If you haven't seen it, you can look at a digital copy by visiting theculturaltraveler.com. Mm-hmm. And visitors or listeners can also sign up for our exclusive Cultural Connections newsletter. And there's some really fun stories and anecdotes, you know, about the culture in the U.S.
Now, is that an e-newsletter or is that a print newsletter?
It's an e-newsletter. It's all digital. Well, there's a hard copy of the magazine that you can receive, but it's also a digital magazine, and then the e-newsletters come out about monthly.
Hmm.
Being always topical information about what's going on in the U.S. and cultural and heritage front.
And what about the U.S. Heritage and Marketing Council? What do they do?
Yeah, the U.S. Heritage and Marketing Council is actually the umbrella organization that publishes the Cultural Traveler, and that is the organization that works in collaboration with the local communities around the country, the different arts councils, museums, different cultural entities. And what we're doing is we're trying to promote cultural travel, throughout the U.S. and also globally, so that more and more people are aware what there is that's being offered that they can visit.
I see. We're talking with Nancy Han Bono about women's suffrage and the Cultural Traveler.
Nancy, are there any books or film documentaries on women's suffrage that you can recommend?
Yeah, well, there are numerous books on women's suffrage, and I would start, honestly, by going online or to your library. Lots of the great biographies and autobiographies, like we were mentioning about Sojourner Truth. In addition to these, I would highly recommend the 4-part television series, The Vote. It aired earlier this summer on PBS. Again, I think Richard mentioned it last week, but it deserves mentioning again. Not only is it educational, it's just so engaging. It includes so much original footage. You know, you see the women come to life, you know, with their protest and their marches, and you see Alice Paul during her hunger strike. I mean, it really kind of brings it home what these women went through.
Okay. How do Travelitch radio listeners learn more about the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage and the ongoing battle for women's rights?
Well, I would encourage you to go to theculturaltraveler.com, where we have a link to some of the exhibits, the ongoing exhibits, a comprehensive listing. And I know we're running out of time, but I just want to say that I encourage people in your own areas, in your own states. Locally, there's a lot of activities going on because it wasn't just a national effort. Remember, the women's suffrage was every state had their own crusades as well. So I would encourage you to look in your own backyard and see what you can, you know, exhibits that you can enjoy to celebrate the women's suffrage.
Okay. Many thanks to tonight's guest, Nancy Han Bono, president of NHB Marketing and Communications and contributor to The Cultural Traveler, Exploring America. Thanks for being our guest, Nancy.
Oh, thank you so much. Enjoyed it really very much. Take care.
Okay. And listeners, summer is over, but baseball has begun its long playoff season, so this is your chance to get the best armchair companion for the postseason. My book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. 480 pages for less than a sawbuck. It's both a coffee table book and a bathroom book. Read it backwards and still enjoy it. That's The New Baseball Bible 2020 edition with Mike Trout on the cover. You can get it on Amazon.com today. And that's it for this edition of Travelitch Radio. Next week, same time, same station, same writer, and same announcers, we'll present John Harvey of Opulent Africa, followed by a special Halloween show on October 29th. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Mariella Nugent-Lee, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.